This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Aaron Mankey's Cabinet of Curiosities, a production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild.
Our world is full of the unexplainable. And if history is an open book, all of these amazing tales are right there on display, just waiting for us to explore. Welcome to the Cabinet of Curiosities.
Walk around New York City today, and you're surrounded by a feast for the senses. You might hear sidewalk conversations or a subway car rumbling underfoot. You might also smell peanuts roasting on the stand on the corner, and you'll definitely see massive buildings reaching toward the sky overhead. Oh, and cars. Lots of cars, spewing exhaust into the air and honking at all hours while the streets clog up. New York City today can feel almost claustrophobic with everything going on around us. But it wasn't always like this. Once upon a time, it looked a lot different. 1800s New York was just becoming the hustling, bustling metropolis it is today. The streets were packed with horse-drawn carriages and pedestrians. Stores lined the avenues, selling all kinds of goods, before long-chain coffee shops and fast food places took over. But even though the city was growing and evolving, it still faced the same problem as every city in America: the weather. Summers were blisteringly hot, and winters in New York were especially hard to face. Feet of snow would bring everything to a halt, but New Yorkers didn't let flurries and blizzards slow them down. If anything, they got faster. In January of 1830, the bitter cold had led to inches of snow coating the ground, trees, and storefronts. Over the following days, that blanket of white would get crushed and compacted until it was hard and flat enough to walk on. But most of the time, people would use another means of transportation to get around. That month, Scottish politician James Stewart came to visit and saw firsthand how the locals dealt with the snow. The New York Carnival began, and the beautiful, light-looking sleighs made their appearance, he wrote. He watched as people strapped horses to their sleighs and took to the streets, zooming through Manhattan, and I quote, at the rate of 10 or 12 miles an hour. You see, until the end of the 19th century, men, women, and children took advantage of the otherwise harsh conditions, making the best of them. These carnivals lasted for hours, but most people ventured out between 3 and 5 p.m. During those times, thousands of Manhattan residents would steer their sleighs through the city. Central Park was one of the most popular locations, and people used whatever they had available to dash through the snow. There were even public sleighs, like buses, that would pull groups of people all at a time. But eventually, New Yorkers realized that the carnivals needed a little friendly competition. In the late 1800s, the city's streets were transformed into racetracks for sleigh races. Small models called cutters would fly through the upper avenues with the wind whipping the faces of the people handling them. But despite the dangerous speeds achieved by racers, the press called these contests something deceptively calm, trotting races, which doesn't sound fast or furious. In December of 1869, dozens of racers set out to prove themselves after a major snowstorm. An article in the New York Herald described them as, and I quote, Roman chariots, spitting flakes of snow in their wake as they careened across Harlem. Local businesses also got in on the action. McGowan's Pass Tavern on 104th Street held a yearly race for anyone who wanted to participate. Winners were given a bottle of champagne every year until the tavern was torn down in 1915. Unfortunately, as New York continued to expand and formalize throughout the 19th century, both the carnivals and the sleigh races faded out of fashion. These events had helped city dwellers pass the dreary winter months with ease. After all, it was hard to stay sad when every fresh snow meant another chance to beat your neighbor to the finish line. The advent of the automobile, though, brought all of that to an end because it was hard to navigate a sleigh through Boston around all of those cars. Today, tourists and couples can take a horse-drawn carriage ride on demand, enjoying a scenic trot through Central Park. But little do they know that over 100 years before, that peaceful outing might have looked and sounded very different, with a lot more snow and a lot less traffic. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hey, how's your social battery right now? Are you feeling drained like me? I know how easy it can be to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. So, what's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Either way, therapy can help give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I know firsthand just how helpful therapy can be to bringing clarity to my priorities and my decisions. It empowers me to be the best version of myself, because therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/curiosities today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/curiosities.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Lighthouses are contradictory places. For lost ships, they signal the safety of a home shore. At the same time, they warn of dangers hidden beneath the seas. They're symbols of civilization on a deserted sea. And yet for the lighthouse keepers on the remote Flannan Isles off of Scotland, their job kept them far away from the rest of society. That kind of isolation was hard to get used to, as you might imagine. The keepers quickly found that when something strange happened, there was no one they could tell. And when something went terribly, horribly wrong, there was no one to hear them scream. On December 26th of 1900, the crew of the small ship Hesperus approached the lighthouse on Aylan Moor, the largest of the Flannan Isles. The ship had been delayed several days by a storm, but it had finally arrived to relieve the three lighthouse keepers stationed on the island. The crew was surprised when no one came out to greet them. The captain of the Hesperus blew his ship's whistle and even fired off a firecracker to alert the keepers. But James Duckett, Thomas Marshall, and Donald MacArthur were nowhere to be seen. Inside the lighthouse, it felt as if the three missing keepers had only just stepped out. Their beds weren't made, and there was half-eaten food left out in the kitchen. The door was unlocked, and a chair was found overturned. The oil in the lamps was full, but the clock had stopped. And while two of their heavy oilskin raincoats were missing, the third was hanging right there by the door. The clues the relief team found inside didn't offer much more enlightenment. A box of supplies near the western boat landing had been smashed, and its contents were strewn about the shore. Iron railings had been wrenched out of their concrete bases. Even a one-ton boulder had moved to a new resting place. But most unusual were the last three entries the keepers had left in the logbook. On December 12th, 14 days before the Hesperus had arrived, keeper Thomas Marshall had recorded a storm. According to him, there were, and I quote, "severe winds the likes of which I have never seen before in 20 years. He also noted that keeper William MacArthur had been crying. This entry concerned the crew of the Hesperus for two reasons. For one thing, William MacArthur had a reputation as a tough man who loved to fight. Crying was out of the ordinary for him. For another, according to reports from the nearby coast, the logbook was wrong. There was no storm on December 12th of 1900. Thomas Marshall's entry the next day on December 13th noted that the storm was still raging and the three keepers had taken to praying for it to end. Finally, on December 15th, he wrote the last entry in the logbook. "Storm ended, sea calm. God is over all." All of this left the Northern Lights Board, which managed the lighthouse there, with a mystery. They had the pieces of the puzzle, but no clear solution. As news of the Keeper's disappearance came to light, speculation ran rampant. Some people, familiar with William MacArthur's quick temper, wondered whether he suffered a violent outburst and murdered his two companions. Not wanting to face the consequences of what he had done, he somehow dumped the bodies in the sea and escaped, or jumped into the waves himself. Others believed that the sea wasn't to blame. They hadn't been taken by the natural world, but by something supernatural. Flannan Isle was named after St. Flannan, a 6th-century Irish bishop who built a church on the island. And according to legend, even St. Flannan himself wouldn't stay there past nightfall due to the evil spirits that ran amok after sundown. Superstitious people thought that it must have been those dark forces that kidnapped the three lighthouse keepers. Without evidence, these speculations were hard to prove. It didn't help that investigators from the Northern Lighthouse Board were missing their biggest clue, the lighthouse keepers themselves. The three men's bodies had never been found. With the facts they had on hand, the board came to the following conclusion. During a storm on the island, strong winds or waves must have caused extreme damage to the Western Landy. Duckett and Marshall had grabbed their oilskins and left to go secure their supplies when a freak wave dragged them into the sea. MacArthur grew worried and followed them, going against lighthouse board rules to keep one keeper in the lighthouse at all times. He must have been so panicked, he left his coat behind. When he reached the landing, he too fell into the sea and was lost. We may never discover what really happened in December of 1900 on that small, isolated island. Searching for the answers is a bit like holding up a lantern in a cave. Sometimes the brighter you shine the light, the deeper the shadows grow.
I hope you've enjoyed today's guided tour of the Cabinet of Curiosities. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or learn more about the show by visiting curiositiespodcast.com. This show was created by me, Aaron Mankey, in partnership with How Stuff Works. I make another award-winning show called Lore, which is a podcast, book series, and television show. And you can learn all about it over at theworldoflore.com. And until next time, stay curious. Thank you.